next case is Michael Dwarning versus City of Euclid. Mr. Melizer.
Good morning, Mr. Chief Justice. May it please the court. My name is Rich Melizer. I'm here on behalf of the City of Euclid. At council table is Bill Blackie, also representing the City of Euclid. Also at council table is Barbara Besser. She is representing the two individual defendants in this case. If there are questions concerning the application of the exhaustion doctrine to the individual defendants, I would ask the court to also direct those questions to Ms. Besser. And I would reserve 3 minutes. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for a rebuttal and give perhaps a minute of that time to Ms. Besser if there are questions concerning the application of the doctrine to individual defendants. The city in this case is not asking this court to diminish common law or statutory rights that a public employee may have outside of the civil service process. The city is simply asking this court to affirm, as a growing body of Ohio appellate authority has done, to reaffirm the judicial exhaustion doctrine in the context in which that doctrine arose, the government context, and in a public employment setting for classified civil servants that is more compelling, at least as compelling, we believe more compelling, than in the institutional hospital setting that this court in 1990 applied the judicial exhaustion doctrine outside of the traditional agency review context.
Explain to me practically how this would work if you require exhaustion when you have an independent right to file an action under civil law. What happens in going through the administrative process, and at what point can you reject that and decide to sue?
I will speak to the civil service context because that's what this appeal's about. The classified civil servant would have an obligation to exercise his right, constitutionally and statutorily given, his property rights to his job, expansive rights to the civil service process. He then goes through a hearing provided for by the municipal civil service. That hearing, there's pretty strict time limits. It's an expeditious hearing. It's a hearing that provides full due process. It provides him the right to counsel. It provides him the right to cross-examine witnesses. It provides him the opportunity to subpoena witnesses.
And if
at the end of that hearing, the Civil Service Commission then makes a determination. Either they determine that the removal, in this case, was just, or the removal was unjust. If the Civil Service Commission determines...
Is anything that happens in that hearing, would any of that be res judicata or binding on a civil action that's subsequently filed?
I guess there's two responses. It depends what the civil action is. I think this court has already held in Whitehall that it would not be binding on a subsequent 4112 action or discrimination action. It would not be res judicata, clearly. Also, there is a right to appeal from the Civil Service Commission process under 2506.
Does your exhaustion requirement require that they appeal first also before they sue if they choose to go that route?
No. I don't know. It does not require that they appeal.
Your position is they have to go through the whole hearing, get a judgment, a decision, either take it on up in the civil process by an appeal, or only then can they go to a civil action under the discrimination statute.
The way it would work in a 4112 context or discrimination statute is the civil servant is only required to exhaust the remedy provided by the city through the civil service process. Once he has exhausted that right, there's no obligation to appeal because there's no res judicata. This court has already held that in Whitehall, that a civil service commission cannot bar a subsequent discrimination case. So once you have exhausted your rights after you've met your exhaustion requirement with the Civil Service Commission, at that point, regardless of what the Civil Service Commission decides, whether it decides it was unjust or just, if it decides it was unjust and puts the civil servant back into the workforce, you know, that effectuates the doctrine of res judicata and the important policies underlying that doctrine, because it very well may negate the need for further litigation or for any litigation, because the employee has the prompt relief, is returned to work, something that, frankly, a judicial system does not allow, a quick and prompt remedy to the civil servant.
Counsel, it appears, though, that the civil service rules, 8.3, doesn't require that there be exhaustion of administrative remedies when you have the word may, that the individual or any employee or officer may request a hearing to appeal a notice of suspension. That doesn't sound like this is something that must be done. I mean, even if we were to accept your argument.
There is a almost unanimity among the courts in Ohio, including this court in Nemesee, that what that means is an employee may either pursue a remedy against the city, contest his removal, or he may forego that right and walk away. That's how that language has been construed. It doesn't mean it's an option. It's optional on the part of the employee to ever either pursue his rights or to forego those rights, as the appellee did in this case, and choose to retire and walk away. That's this court in Nemesee construed the exact same language. That language has been construed in decades of case law in Ohio in construing administrative procedures. And this is the only court, to our knowledge, the Court of Appeals in this case, that has held that somehow makes it optional as to whether the appellee or the civil servant has an obligation to exhaust his remedies.
Didn't the Court of Appeals distinguish Nemesee on the fact that there was a contract there?
Yes, and I think that goes to the error in the court. By definition, civil servants are not employed by contract. They're employed by a statute. They're employed by, they have constitutional rights to their job. Those statutory rights and constitutional rights to their employment far exceed what rights they might have in terms of administrative remedy to their employment exist pursuant to contract.
Why wouldn't constitutional rights to their job argue in favor of giving them the option of filing suit?
One of the purposes, well, there's three purposes, actually more, for the judicial exhaustion doctrine. One of those is to allow the administrative agency, or this case, the employer, public employer, the right to correct its own errors.
The appellee says they've already made the error. What do you mean correct the errors?
That's the whole purpose of the administrative exhaustion doctrine, Your Honor, is to allow the public entity to develop a civil service commission that can oversee the decision of the appointing authority. And if the appointing authority was an error, and the public entity has a civil service commission that is specifically developed to address those errors, then by allowing a civil servant to avoid the exhaustion doctrine, you have thwarted the city's ability to correct an error of the appointing authority.
Counsel, what remedies can the Civil Service Commission afford an employee?
Back pay and reinstatement.
Back payment and reinstatement, nothing more. So for a claim of discrimination, their hands are tied as to any kind of monetary award. Is that correct?
Well, they're entitled to back pay.
Well, back pay, I understand that, but above back pay for the if there's a finding of discrimination, actually, do they make a finding such as discrimination, or do they just make a finding of wrongful discharge?
They make the finding whether the removal was just or unjust. That standard is actually broader than discrimination standard.
So if an employee has been discriminated against for whatever reason, and they go to the commission, and they are reinstated, and they are awarded back pay, do they have any recourse in the common pleas court with regard to the discrimination action?
Absolutely. If they want to continue to pursue, even if there's a finding that the termination was unjust, the exhaustion doctrine does not take away remedies. We've heard a lot about that in the briefing, but that's just not the case. The exhaustion doctrine affords the city to put the employee back to work with full back pay. If the civil servant is not happy with that remedy, he's still free to pursue his case, his discrimination case.
Is that a decided issue? Because there seems to be dispute about it among the parties. Is that a decided issue? I mean, decided
in terms
have we decided
of
that?
What issue in terms of the back pay?
That one can use both avenues of relief, both civil service and then file an action. Have we decided that?
Yes. In Whitehall, this court specifically addressed that issue and said that if you pursue the civil service remedy, that does not bar a subsequent 4112 claim. In that case, it was an OCRC process, but whether it's an OCRC process under 05 or 99, it would be the same. A civil service process does not bar. And there's been a lot of confusion, frankly, in the briefing about barring an election and exhaustion. They're not the same thing. The city is not jeopardizing or taking away, and the exhaustion doctrine does not do that.
What about the
rights?
What about the practical, practical effect on the timelines, though? If exhaustion is required, and I believe I read that under the Euclid ordinances, that has to be within 10 days of the discharge. And if exhaustion is required, doesn't that then essentially compress the time frame in which a person has a right to file under 4112 to 10 days?
The exhaustion doctrine is not, first of all, it's not jurisdictional. So there may be exceptions, legitimate exceptions, when a court may not want to apply that 10 day and say there's reasons why we might want to expand that 10 days. But there's no court, no case that I'm aware of that holds that a underlying remedy provided by an administrative agency implicates the statute of limitations for later statutory cause of action. This court in Nemesis applied a 10-day limitation on an intentional infliction of emotional distress claim, which has, I believe, 4-year statute of limitations.
But how can you exhaust your remedies if you don't file within 10 days? And if you don't file within 10 days and exhaust your remedies, then how can you, under your argument, how can you file under 4112?
Well, part of the purpose of the exhaustion of administrative remedies doctrine is to encourage civil servants to exhaust their rights. And as I said, there's no requirement that the underlying, I mean, that's a requirement that we'd have to create, that the underlying remedy has to match the later statute of limitations. And that's not a requirement in the exhaustion doctrine. If, again, it's an equitable doctrine, if there's some basis to later find that the 10-day requirement was inequitable, lack of notice or whatnot, the court would be free to excuse the lack of exhaustion. Can I reserve?
How does an employee who retired have any benefit, any duty here? Isn't there a voluntary resignation?
Yeah, I mean, that's the city's position is that obviously in this case, the appellee absolutely chose not to pursue his administrative remedy because he wanted to get the benefits of retirement, which he did get, which in his case was a $50,000 choice because he got sick pay benefits. It is exactly the point of the exhaustion doctrine. Now he's turning around and trying to pursue the city in court under common law and statutory theories when he did not exhaust his remedy and did not give the city a chance to address those.
So, saying
he's retired, but he's saying he was discharged, and he's the one pursuing the claim.
So if he had, under the fact pattern in this case, had then pursued an administrative remedy, your defense was that he's not entitled to one because he retired.
He would get an administrative remedy. The city's position might be in that process that he chose to retire. I mean, If he had gone to the remedy, he would not have retired. He would have contested it. There would not be a retirement because he would have said, no, I'm being asked to be removed. The mayor basically
said... You're saying he didn't even have the right to retire. He should have filed an administrative remedy instead of retiring.
Absolutely.
That's your position.
Yes.
And if he retired and then pursued an administrative remedy, your defense would have been he retired, he's not entitled to one.
Well, that would not have happened because if he would have had to have pursued his remedy, which he chose not to do. He chose to retire instead of doing that,
so
and now he's trying
is,
to have his cake and eat it too.
So the answer is you would have defended any in this case, under these facts, had he retired and then filed an administrative appeal under your theory of exhaustion, your defense would have been he retired and he's not entitled to it.
In this case, he did not exhaust. He retired, if I understood your question.
Thank you, Mr. Melizer. Mr. Gittes.
Mr. Chief Justice, if it pleases the members of the court, the appellants in this case are asking you essentially to disregard specific directives of the General Assembly and 20 years of case law from this court itself. They are also asking you to totally distort and turn Namazie, the exhaustion case they rely on almost entirely, into a creature that has never existed before. And lastly, they're asking you to allow civil service commissions which are not competent or authorized to decide tort cases and statutory actions to suddenly become the clearinghouse and delay access to courts, even though they can't make the decisions pertinent to those claims. Now let me, if I might, go through and say why I say that. First, besides the fact that this court in 1989 said that 411208 and the legislature has made it clear that Chapter 4112 is to maximize remedies to eliminate discrimination, not minimize them, despite the fact that this court has consistently held the legislature did not require a choice or force plaintiffs in civil rights cases to go to the Ohio Civil Rights Commission, despite the fact that this court said in Smith, seven years ago now, that you don't have to go to the Ohio Civil Rights Commission, suddenly we're being told the legislature really intended that public employees who are treated no differently under the statute, the definition of coverage is the same, have to go to a civil service commission before they can pursue civil rights remedies, even when the agency, as the state has pointed out in their amicus brief, that is dedicated to dealing with civil rights claims, they don't have to go to. It defies common sense. But more important, they argue, their whole argument in this case is based on the facade that, well, all of your decisions and the structure of Chapter 4112 deal with whether you have to go to the Ohio Civil Rights Commission as opposed to what they call internal employer remedies. That's their distinction. You will notice in their briefs, other than a footnote and a reply, which is not relevant to what I'm about to say, they never, ever talk about 411214C. There, the legislature made it absolutely clear that no internal employer procedures, whether it's procedures in public employers or private employers, have to be exhausted before you can pursue your claims. That provision says for age claims only, that if there is a procedure, a hearing process, an arbitration process, at which an employee can have just cause determined, you may not file an age claim. Now, if the legislature wanted you to have to exhaust the same procedures, whether they're hearing procedures or grievance procedures, in other types of claims, they would have put it in the statute. They made a knowing choice. Under the doctrines applied by this court, and the ancient Latin theories, which I will not try to pronounce, by choosing that one specific statutory exception of the right to go to court, they were excluding all others. As this court has said over and over again, the legislature knows how to write those kinds of provisions. They chose not to, and they haven't chosen to change that since the 1970s.
Your argument presupposes that there's a wrongful discharge here, does it not?
No, Your Honor, and I want to be, we have to be very careful when we talk about this.
All right,
and that's
well,
how NAMSI
my question
gets confused.
Is that there's a letter of resignation in the file, which has been submitted and accepted by the city fathers. And pursuant to that, benefits have been paid out. So it seems as though we're coming in the ball game in the third inning. I mean, we haven't gotten to the predicate question of discharge versus retirement.
Well, Your Honor, first, that's a disputed factual issue. One issue here is whether there's a constructive discharge.
Pardon me,
case.
Please.
Mm-hmm. One of the questions, the factual issues in this case, is whether or not there was a discharge or at least a constructive discharge. That resignation letter was written after the March 2nd, 2004 letter from the mayor saying, you are fired. Then he wrote a resignation letter. That's a classic case of constructive discharge. Whether or not, and to suggest, as suggested by the defendants in this case, that that's a windfall, that this 30-year fire chief who was a productive and dedicated member of the fire department for 30 years is getting a windfall because he gets his unused sick leave and vacation pay, which at most is an offset to all of his other damages, is shameful in our opinion.
But that issue is not before us.
That is not before you, and I agree. And the distinction I want to make here is this. Besides this court's jurisprudence, besides 4112.14c, 411208 says this court is to liberally construe the chapter in favor of remedies. You don't enhance remedies by delaying them. You know the old saying, justice delayed is justice denied.
So that's your argument to the question that I asked opposing counsel about the limitations of the commission here, that they can only offer a reinstatement and back pay and does not extinguish your right then to proceed with a discrimination case in the Court of Common Pleas. And the reason you don't want to do that is because of the delay, and you'd rather have it presented all at one time.
Yes, Your Honor, but it's even worse than that. For many cases, it's not just delay, it's no even chance for a remedy. I'll give you a number of examples. One, sexual harassment case in which there's suspension and retaliation for complaining about it. Yes, the commission could take up whether or not there was cause for the suspension, but they can't decide whether it was retaliatory. Worse, they can't remedy the harassment. So that woman may face continuing harassment day after day after day because the commission can't do anything about it. A court could. You have a case like Dwornings. He didn't want reinstatement. That job was poison, given the facts of this record, if you've read them. There was a person dedicating his life to destroying his career there. It's not the kind of case where reinstatement's appropriate. He needs front pay. The commission can't award him front pay, nor can the commission order remedial measures such as training, grievance process, EEO prerogatives and directives, all of which courts can do in appropriate circumstances. There's no remedy at all under this. 411208 says specifically, any law that's inconsistent with Chapter 4112 is not to have effect. While creating, as I think Justice Cupps was hitting on, a 10-day statute of limitations, which is what it is, definitely is inconsistent with Chapter 4112. Suddenly your statute of limitations is gone if you don't file something in 10 days. Even worse, they're trying to sweep in under a NAMSI theory, which has nothing to do with this case really, with one exception. They're trying to sweep in even tort claims. Let me give you an example. There's an invasion of privacy claim in this case against the individual defendants. It has to do with disclosing medical information illegally. There's nothing that the Civil Service Commission is going to hear that has anything to do with that. Whatever they decide, whether they find just cause or not just cause, it's not going to change or affect an invasion of privacy claim. They may have had a legitimate reason. Let's say they did to fire him. That doesn't give you a right to disclose confidential medical information. It has nothing to do with the Civil Service Commission. In most discrimination cases, the findings of the commission may be totally irrelevant anyway. And by the way, if you read the charter, it says their powers are limited to affirming, disaffirming, or modifying the decision. Not this broad just cause mandate that you're hearing from appellate.
Putting aside the facts of this case of the firing versus the construction of discharge, in your years of experience in doing this type of work, is there any reason why an employee who, let's say we find that they have the option from the get-go of either route, is there any reason why they would go with the administrative appeal route versus a lawsuit route?
Yes, there are times when they would, because they may feel, if it's a pure, if it's not a mixed motive case, if it's not a case based on comparables, in other words, we have to get into other personnel records, which commissions generally won't do, then there may be a benefit. If it's just an issue about whether there was just cause or not, and the main evidence about discrimination is pretext, that it was not really true, the Civil Service Commission may serve a purpose of creating a factual record on that issue. But in most cases, the proof of motive may be independent of whether there was just cause, mixed motive cases, or it could be based on, well, okay, I missed work, but you let all these men miss work and didn't do anything about it, which isn't involved with Civil Service Commission. So, or you can't get the remedy, like Mr. Dorning, there's just no remedy. There's no point to going to the Civil Service Commission. And in all the hostile environment cases, you're just preventing women and minorities from getting any help because they got to sit around and wait. And by the way, I don't know of any court cases that say your exhaustion requirement stops at the end of the administrative hearing. I think you're going to hear them argue, if not them, other agencies saying, well, gee, you got to exhaust all the way up to the Common Pleas Court, the Court of Appeals. So you're talking about potential delays of a year or more.
Mr. Gittes, do I understand that your position would be the same even if this language did not say the word may and said shall?
Yes, Your Honor. And I say that for two reasons. One, the language, the explicit language of Chapter 4112 and 4112.14c, also in 4112.08, as this court has interpreted over and over and over again, also because of nemesis. Let me just talk for a couple of minutes about nemesis. I suspect, you know, if you read the facts of the case, which gets lost in briefing, we always just talk about the holdings. What was nemesis? It was a physician, a pediatrician, who had his privilege taken away after numerous warnings, and he had a hearing process, a due process procedure, which was part of his contract to challenge his privileges. What is not mentioned about nemesis? One, he didn't dispute that there was an exhaustion requirement. He did not argue that there wasn't. He argued that it was a vain act because of the circumstances that that's all he argued. What did this court say in nemesis? They didn't say that you have to exhaust whatever an employer provides you, regardless of whether it's torts or statutes that are independently viable and have really nothing to do with the administrative process. The whole concept of nemesis and exhaustion relates to protecting administrative processes that are relevant and involved in the claim. I mean, I think as Justice O'Donnell pointed out in the Phillips case for the Court of Appeals, in a contract situation, or if you do go, or if you were required, for example, to go to the Ohio Civil Rights Commission, you can't run to court because you're defeating an administrative exhaustion requirement either created by court or statute. In a contract case, there is an argument. And they would have had an argument here had they filed the proper notice with the Civil Service Commission as required by state law, and triggered an obligation as to the breach of contract claim, which is what, in the Phillips case, was the focus. But they never did that. But putting aside the contract claim in this case, almost all the other claims are clearly not the subject of relief for this commission. They simply don't have the authority, and I submit competence, to deal with it. And secondly, the nemesis doctrine of exhaustion is in the context of judicial review. That if you look at the syllabus and the language, what the court said is where there's going to be a judicial review. Well, there's no judicial review in administrative terms of court suits. There's appeals with completely different kinds of standards. And you'll note that the court never says that tort claims are subsumed. Independent court claims that are not related to some administrative agency, which is delegated to hear them first.
So, counsel, would you say, would you agree that the employee alleging the wrongful act against them has the option of going to the court or the Civil Service Commission? Is that
Absolutely.
Under all circumstances?
No. If it's a...
Unless there's a court order or statute that places him or her squarely within the jurisdiction of the Civil Service
Commission.
Or to
use an example, if the defendant had properly filed the right notice, the breach of contract claim, there is a claim in the complaint for breach of contract. I think we would agree that then they would have to go through the Civil Service Commission. But putting that aside and ignoring the fact they didn't follow the procedures they were required to follow, none of the other claims, the tort claims here, invasion of privacy.
My point is, if the employee is only seeking reinstatement and back pay, is he or she precluded from court and has to use the Civil Service Commission?
No, Your Honor, I don't think, particularly as the 4112 claims.
Even though, no, I'm not saying that based on a discrimination.
Oh,
I'm
I
just
see.
Saying for whatever reason, but not discrimination. You know, they say, I shouldn't have been suspended, I shouldn't have been discharged, and I want back pay and reinstatement. And that is clearly within the competence of the Civil Service Commission. Are you saying that that employee has the option to go to common pleas court and bypass the Civil Service Commission for just that remedy?
Your Honor, I'm not trying to be difficult. I'm having trouble understanding. If the essence of the claim is purely, was there just cause for discharge, and only involves back pay remedies, equitable remedies, I believe that kind of claim, if I'm understanding you right, which is kind of like a breach of contract claim, must go to the, they'd be obligated if the notices are filed and so forth. But any other kind of
must
tort
go to the
would
Civil
have
Service
to go
Commission.
To the Civil Service Commission. If it's a kind of breach of contract claim, yes. But almost every other claim has different elements and different remedies. I hope that answers the question.
It does answer my question, but I'm just wondering now whether it's mandatory that you allow the Civil Service Commission to deal with what the Civil Service Commission has competence to deal with, and then the rest of the allegations, complaint that the employee has moves on to the common pleas court.
Well, Your Honor, if the decision below was to force the breach of contract claim to be stayed pending,
kind of a bifurcation of
yeah,
all
and
of
then
your
the rest of the claims,
your complaints sure. revolving around your discharge or your employment situation.
Well, I mean, all the claims revolving around your discharge encompasses far more than I'm agreeing with you on, Your Honor. I mean, because, for example, the defamation and invasion of privacy may relate to your discharge, but they are independent elements. Your discrimination claims, you may have retaliation claims based on the workers' comp statute. Now, they involve your discharge, but there is no exhaustion requirement for all the reasons I just talked about. Anemacy doesn't really apply because it's not a breach of contract case in its essence. But I would agree with you that it would have been appropriate for the court to resolve the jurisdictional question about whether notice was filed and stay a decision on exhaustion as to the breach of contract claim below, but all the other claims should have proceeded forthwith.
Thank you, Mr. Geddes.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Melizer, you've used your time, but you may take 30 seconds.
Thank you very much. I just encourage the court to read Nemesis. This distinction between contract and tort claims was addressed in Nemesis. Nemesis specifically applied the exhaustion doctrine to the intentional infliction of emotional distress claim, addressed Justice O'Connor's comments, and said, we are not going to carve out an exception for punitive damages and compensatory damages because the exhaustion doctrine does not take away those remedies. It preserves those remedies. He still has the right to pursue those remedies. We did address 14C in our brief. Again, that's an attempt to confuse exhaustion with exclusion. Those are different. We are barring or precluding. We are not doing that. We're asking this court simply to apply the exhaustion doctrine. And last, let me just say that we've heard a lot about delay. And on the other hand, we say that 10 days is too fast. Part of the judicial exhaustion doctrine, the purpose is to allow for an expeditious resolution of disputes without the need for intervention of courts, which is in the benefit of the civil litigant in the benefit of the court system and in the benefit of the taxpayer.
Well, counsel, if you agree that the jurisdiction of the Civil Service Commission is only for reinstatement and back pay, that or finding that the discharge was lawful, correct?
That's correct. But that's a broad standard that would subsume the kind of claims that they're making here.
If someone isn't requiring or asking for reinstatement and back pay, and they have a whole host of other allegations and remedies that they are seeking, do they still have to go to the Civil Service Commission?
Absolutely. If they're contesting that their removal was unjust, they have an obligation to go to the Civil Service Commission and ask the Civil Service Commission to remedy that unjust removal.
But the remedy is not what they want. They don't want to come back to work. They could
decide not to go back to work, and then they can bring their suit. But this court has recognized that does affect their damages. It affects the economic damages. This court recognizes that if an employer gives an unconditional offer of reinstatement, that would cut off back pay. So he's free to reject reinstatement, but he doesn't excuse his obligation to exhaust. He still has that obligation to exhaust.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The case is submitted. You'll be advised for opinion.